Well, welcome along. It's the start of December, which means it's summertime in New Zealand and getting horribly cold in the Northern Hemisphere. So cold, in fact, that England just want to go and play another game of rugby because they can. Joined on the pod this week by Hayden Donnell, staff writer for Rugby Pass and The Spinoff, and former All Black and broadcaster with Sky TV, Jeff Wilson. Hello, lads.
Hello, Scotty. Hi.
Scotty, happy to be there.
Well, I tell you what, Jeff, let's start with you because Australia are starting a test match against England with Nick Phipps at halfback because Will Genia can't get out of his club deal with Stade Francais. How ridiculous have we got in rugby when the biggest test of the year and you can't release your players from club duty?
Well, my assumption is, as always, it's outside the international window. That'll be the excuse the club is using. Is that what they're throwing at us?
Absolutely, and boom. So,
yeah, absolutely. I absolutely agree because the same thing happened when the All Blacks played Australia in Auckland. It was a window, a test that was being played outside that so-called world rugby window that they try and design. And look, I think it's disappointing. It's frustrating for everybody. But in the end, you know, you got to look at it and I suppose they're trying to manage the workload of the players. England and Australia wanted another test match. They want to go at it. Australia knew it all along, didn't they? Bottom line, though, is Nick Phipps the right guy to get them across the line against England? I'm not so sure. I'll tell you what, though, this is a great, great test match. After what happened in June, when a 3-0 drubbing that England gave Australia, I can't wait to see this matchup come about and on the weekend. And look, for Australia, the Grand Slam went west, didn't it? Went west last weekend. And all sorts of complaints and frustrations from Michael Checker as usual, but this could be the indicator of their year. Really, if they lose this test match, they've had a shocker of a year. If they win this one, then all of a sudden everything's all right with Australian rugby, right?
Redemption. I'm a big Michael Checker defender. I think I really like him. Yeah. Do you want me to explain?
Please do.
This is the thing. There's so many in rugby. So, I mean, I always compare sort of Steve Hansen to a sort of a piece of wood impersonating a human. And there's so many kind of guys in rugby that are a little bit like, just a little bit on the boring side. And at least you get with Michael Checker, you know, in league, you've got all these people sort of peeing in hotel corridors and pooing in hotel corridors.
And bubbling.
They've got bubbling. They've got everything going on in league. You know, there's lots of stuff for the fans to discuss. Michael Checker's trying to bring a bit of that into rugby and make it a little bit interesting by complaining about, you know,
everything.
Everything. Literally, what is it this week? The scrum.
He was complaining about the referee interpretations of the scrum. Really, though, I get the feeling that he's just getting beasted by a far more savvy media man than Eddie Jones. And the problem for Michael Checker is that he can say whatever he likes. He will never win against Jones off the field. And his only chance is that somehow he gets these 23 blokes up with four changes from last week against Ireland to beat the English. And that is the only thing he can do to Eddie Jones. There is no way at the moment Michael Checker has a single show against Eddie Jones. Eddie Jones has the British press in his pocket.
Yeah.
In his pocket. He will never win this fight.
So you're saying Eddie Jones is winning the trolling battle?
100%. Eddie Jones will win the trolling battle. But the problem is, Jeff, when you've got two Australian coaches going at it like this, they both talk in a sort of pitch that is more suited to a koala escaping a bushfire.
it's a bit of a squeal, isn't it?
It is a squeal.
You get that feeling with them of the fact that they're actually not looking for anything good to say. They're just looking to have a shot at each other. And in the end, this is the world of professional coaching. And when the pressure comes on, and the pressure always does come on, and for Australia, the pressure is all on them. Mm. For Eddie, he's looking at this going, wow. You know what, we could go through the season and we played as well as we could possibly have played, and we chased down the All Blacks record of 18 because we won't have to play the All Blacks until then. You know, I just get the sense we, as much as I hate to say it, we probably need Australia to win this game, and I want Australia to win it so I don't have to hear from Eddie. I do want to hear from Eddie Jones when he loses.
Well, I know.
I want to hear from him. Whose fault's it going to be?
I want that moment as well. I want that one moment where he's got to front up to that press squadron because you know how quickly they will turn on him.
It'll be all downhill. It's over. You know,
I mean,
the dream will be over.
He's a genius, but he's like a little goblin. And I mean, that, I mean, you don't warm to a kind of a goblin, do you? No, I mean, you're like, oh, he's winning, but as soon as the goblin starts losing, you're like, that's a goblin. I mean,
so I'm just from where we've got to right now. So you've insulted Steve Hansen, you've had a crack now with it. You're not hoping to get any of these guys on the show, eh? I mean, that's essentially you're not looking for a one-on-one with these guys.
I'm trying to burn a lot of bridges just today,
And you are succeeding. Well, you are doing a great job at it. Carry on.
Thank you very much. Is there legitimately bad blood between Eddie Jones and Michael Checker, or is it just part of the game, part of the trolling battle this week?
I don't know. I don't know.
I mean, it's one of those things where I think, you know, Eddie Jones does play the game so very, very well. But, I mean, it's almost like he's got to this point now where I think it's taking away from the con.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, people are saying it's add to it. I think shouldn't the focus be on the players? Mm. You know, I mean, isn't it about the teams and what's coming up? And you know, I think that's where Michael Checker, he's bought into, in some ways, to what Eddie Jones is bullshit, really, let's be honest. Mm. And I think that's where Steve Hansen, you know, usually is very, very, very clever, isn't he? He doesn't buy into any of it. He has his own little dig here or there, but he's always pretty, I think, tactful about how he goes about it. But, I mean, in the end, 80 minutes of football is going to decide which one of these coaches is going to come out on top in 2016. And everyone remembers that last test match of the year. Mm.
I want to talk about, too, there's been the assertion made over the last couple of weeks, Jeff, that the gap has seriously closed between the Northern Hemisphere and the Southern Hemisphere. There's two points I would make about that. One thing that we don't cover a lot, especially in this part of the world, is the fact that the All Blacks, the Wallabies, the Fijian boys who have played Super Rugby, all of these Southern Hemisphere teams are 13 months into their season. This is a long time to have been playing rugby. Compare that with the Northern teams who are only a couple of months into their season. There is always a disparity between players and teams in terms of fatigue levels at this time of the year. So can we really say that they have got better, or is it just a case again of tired teams heading north and hitting sides who are really in their prime as far as this particular season is concerned?
No, you're bang on. And it's like when teams come to New Zealand in June. It's the end of their long season. They come to New Zealand, they're absolutely spent as well. You know, they're not operating 100%. They've usually got some players who are beaten up. They've usually got guys who are injured and unavailable. They come down and we sit here and complain about it. And it's only because of the depth that we do have, we're able to go up to the Northern Hemisphere and still be able to win some games. You know, now England sort of, they certainly broke that trend when they went to Australia, but it was a poor Australian side in June. Really, really was. And England took advantage of that. But, you know, Wales come down, and traditionally they come down into the Southern Hemisphere and they struggle. So you're absolutely 100% right. It is tough on these players now. They're playing 30-plus games, heavyweight contests, throughout the whole season. And, you know, you talk about it. The Super Rugby guys, what, they got back together yesterday, didn't they?
Yeah, they're
back into it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're back into it. And the guys who have been away on tour have just come home, whether it be the New Zealand Maoris or the All Blacks. They're going to get their mandatory month off. But you remember the month off, they don't do nothing because you don't want to do that because you lose everything then. So they'll probably take 4 or 5 days off, take a bit of a breather, get some sleep, and then they'll start getting back into, okay, I've got to do a little bit of rehab, I've got to do a little bit in the gym, because you work so hard to get yourself to a certain level. So you are 100% right that it's all about timing, isn't it? It's about when we play and meet each other, and that's what I suppose is so special about World Cups, because everything focuses on a World Cup. There's never any excuses at World Cups, and you know, at the moment, that's when we're getting it 100% right and getting our players there in tip-top shape.
At what point do we concede that the Northern Hemisphere is overall better than the Southern Hemisphere? I've already conceded it. Because, South Africa's so bad, and the Wallabies were beaten by England in June, and, you know, sort of it's just the All Blacks holding the fort. I think the Northern Hemisphere overall, if you take all their teams at the moment, they're probably,
Results-wise?
Yeah, do you think if they come to the Southern Hemisphere next year and they win, do you then concede it? And we'll sort of, you'll walk down Queen Street, Scotty, with sort of a sign over your head saying the Northern Hemisphere is now better.
Well, I agree with your assertion. I mean, I think you can't argue with the results. The North have got the results during this autumn series. Ireland had that historic win. England had their sweep. Ireland should have won their series in June, Jeff, against South Africa. Really,
yep.
Really, it was only the Welsh who got punted down here by the All Blacks, but we've already covered off reasons for that. I would say too, and I don't mean this to sound jingoistic or overly patriotic, but let's have a think about what these Northern teams have done. The emulation of the All Blacks is not necessarily about the on-field skill. What the coaches are trying to do up the North is build the depth that the All Blacks have. It's all going on behind the scenes, and when you consider Joe Schmidt, Vern Cotter, Eddie Jones, Warren Gatland, all Australasian coaches, all guys who have been in big club systems, all guys who understand the power of having a deep bench, that's what these teams have done. I think the biggest improvement is not necessarily in the skill level, it's in the amount of competition for places. And I don't know how you feel about that, Jeff, but that's the one thing for me that terrifies me heading into the next World Cup cycle, because these teams now have 30, 31, 32 players, all of whom can step into a test match arena.
Yeah, I mean, in the end, I think if we've got, you know, man for man, we're still going to be in a position where we're going to have more variety to our game, have the ability to do some things and that are special. We're going to have players who could do the special pieces of play, which I think can break games open. And that's the difference. That X factor, we just seem to have more of that. And that's something I think, you know, I don't know that's ever going to change. But you're right. Over a course of 80 minutes, if you've got enough, if you've got enough depth, and that X factor doesn't become, you know, involved in the game or doesn't get opportunity, then they can win those cross test matches. I mean, the Lions tour is a fascinating one for me, as well as the fact that that's the sort of tour that can give Northern Hemisphere greater confidence if they come down to New Zealand and actually find a way to win. They go up against the All Blacks, and if you go on the form that they've shown through this end of year, this tour, are they going to come down in that same sort of shape? Yes, they're going to have a whole, you know, a whole squad of players. It'll be 40 deep at least, I'm sure. I mean, I imagine there might be 50 players here. I don't know. They name how many players, but they've got plenty to choose from now. If you go and look through the sides,
yeah,
you know, you look at England and you look at Ireland, and there's enough of players in Scotland, and there's certainly some talent in Wales. You go, well, hold on. The Lions should be able to gather together a pretty deep side, a team that's, you know, it's just about whether or not one, poor old Warren Gatland can find anyone who can help him coaching, because everyone just keeps saying no, because he's going to have about 50 players. I think it's his biggest challenge right now is actually he needs some world class coaches to appear, these guys.
I guess the advantage for somewhere like England going to the next World Cup is, what did they make last year? Was it $407 million?
Oh yeah, they're flush.
Yeah, exactly. If they start marshalling their money in any kind of useful way, then we're screwed. We can't compete with that.
You can't compete with the revenues, but what England's problem is going to be long term, and we've covered this off on the pod before, is the ongoing battle with the French and English rugby clubs in terms of having the players at their disposal all the time. I mean, we saw earlier this season, Eddie Jones put on a training camp, a couple of guys got broken arms, and that was it. The clubs almost mutinied on the RFU and said, there's no way you're doing this again. I mean, this was a four-day training camp. And that's the issue, I think, that the North's always going to have, that perhaps New Zealand rugby and Australian rugby doesn't have, because the club structure here, especially in New Zealand, says everything is about supporting the All Blacks. We don't have that. The Northern Hemisphere does not have that.
South Africa does now, right?
South Africa's losing all their players. So, that's half the problem for them, is that, you know, it used to be former All Blacks would jettison off to Japan or France and take some cash late in their career. Now they're leaving university and going to play in Japan or France. I think there's 400 South African rugby players in Europe alone, which is staggering. And that doesn't even begin to tell you how many are plying their trade in Japan. And so, you know, for me, the Northern Hemisphere just have to make sure that international rugby is still top dog. And that is going to be a real battleground, Jeff, through this Lions series. It's going to raise its head again and then going forward into the next World Cup. So they're riding a high at the moment. Let's just hope they can maintain.
Yeah, I think the big thing for me as well, Scotty, is as much as they've got that money, you talk about, yeah, we're making money. They're making money because, they're being successful. They've got a fantastic stadium. We always go up there and play them. The North Southern Hemisphere go and play. They step 80,000 into Twickenham. The revenue's not an issue. But in the end, the question for me is there going to be a Bowden Barrett, Dan Carter, Aaron Smith? You know, can they find that level of talent? You know, you're talking about, you know, the cream of the crop. You're talking about the best players in the world. I look at it and go, have they got that have they got that? Is it there? You know, and for me, if it's man for man, you look at an All Black team and you go, who's better in the English side? Who's better than the Irish side? And you're going, better than what we've got here. And I know you talked about it before. I'm such a proud rugby person and All Black fan, but also an analyst. I look at it and go, I don't see anyone in those teams. I go, who I would have ahead of our guys, you know? And so you can't buy players if you know, you just can't. You can't do it. I don't know. What did you think about the French thing? I mean, the two best players or most dangerous looking players were two Fijian wingers. And that's another completely different story, you know?
Yeah, well, that's right.
If they change those eligibility rules, I know Gus Pichot, he's not happy with it, is he?
No, he's not.
He's looking at it and going, he wants world rugby to be world rugby. And, I think this is where England and some of those teams in the end, it comes to your talent level, and I don't know if they're ever going to be at the same talent level that we've got.
All right, mate, we're going to finish off the Rugby Pass podcast today. Hayden Donald, Jeff Wilson joining us with a very simple question. A very simple question. Forget rankings. Which team has impressed you both the most this season? For whatever reason.
It has to be the All Blacks, right? England lost a lot of players due to injury and won every game. I mean, that's amazing for them. So it's very tight between England and the All Blacks. But the All Blacks also lost Richie McCaw, Dan Carter, Man Onu, a lot of people, and they rebuilt and were still the best side in the world. I'm going to change my vote. I'm going to go England.
What about you, Jeff?
I started with the All Blacks and then I changed after thinking for roughly 14 seconds.
Well, I'm actually going to go Ireland.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with a team that has found a way to beat the All Blacks, finally. I mean, you're talking about they were the first side that found an opportunity and put together a team. And Ireland were probably one of the biggest disappointments at last year's Rugby World Cup.
Oh, totally.
They had a couple of injuries, you know, and going in. But they had started trending in the right direction. And then you go and watch them play. The way they played against the All Blacks, not just in the first game, but they tested us in the second test in Dublin. And then they went out and they'd beaten Australia. They are the team for me this season, actually, on the back of the whole year. They've got themselves to a point now where they are a world power. What are they four in the rankings now?
Yeah, I think with a chance to climb again.
They are, exactly. They are a top four side in the world. The All Blacks were great, but in the end, they didn't finish with the dominance I think we all expected them to probably finish with. And losing that test match sort of took a gloss off a lot of great work that they'd done. And then you've got to look at the results of the other side. Australia were rubbish early in the season. South Africa have struggled all year. We've probably taken advantage of the fact that we're up against a couple of teams that just were really, really struggling. So I think as much as maybe even I got blinded a bit through the fact of how well they're playing, I think it's Ireland for me. They're the team that have made some serious, serious strides in 2016.
They were the most heroic. You're a sentimental man, Jeff.
He is a sentimental man.
What about for you though, Scotty? I mean, for you.
I'm going to throw one at you. I'm going to throw the Black Ferns at you. That's one New Zealand team that's gone through unbeaten, 5-0 this season, pumped Australia twice, went up north, beat England, a fully professional program. They beat Ireland, and they beat Canada. Now, that's the top three women's sides in the world, and they dusted them all. And that's an extraordinary tour, given the gaps between games. And it's not they don't get a week like the AB boys do. So they've gone up there, put a squad together under Glenn Moore, and cut a swathe leading into their own World Cup next year. I think they've laid down a massive marker, and some of the players involved, Kendra Coxedge, Salika Winniata, to name just a couple, phenomenal skill set. So I'm going to go Black Ferns for me, my team of the year.
They're going to win the World Cup.
I tell you what, though, and check out the women's sevens at the moment as well.
Oh, they're on fire.
They are on fire.
Correct.
They are on fire. They're ready to go.
All right, mate. We'll get on to the golf course. Great to have your company on the Rugby Pass podcast today. Jeff Wilson, the legendary All Black and broadcaster here in New Zealand with Sky TV. Hayden Donald, staff writer, troll, general man about the site.
Yes.
What a pleasure.
That's how I self-identify, as a troll. Thank you.
Cheers, guys. Take it easy.